Hi, welcome to Making Movies with Andy Young. So this is my fourth interview with Jay Duplass of the Duplass Brothers, and I interviewed him about his short slash long or schlong documentary, Kevin. It's a story of musician Kevin Gant, who was an Austin-based musician who had a pretty strong following in the early 90s, but then he just kind of disappeared out of nowhere. And then while Jay was had just finished Baghead and was working on Cyrus, he made the trek back down to Austin to go find Kevin and start working on this documentary and kind of reconnect to his artistic roots from how he made movies like The Puffy Chair. You can find the transcript of this interview at moviemaker.com. You can find the movie Kevin at iTunes, and you can look at Kevin's music both on iTunes and on CD Baby. I highly recommend it. He's a great musician, and it's really, you can tell from Jay's description in the interview, it's really worth checking out. So enjoy. So when did you first discover the music of Kevin Gant?
In, I think, probably like 1992. Mm-hmm. I came to Austin in 91. I had no idea that the rest of the world was not like New Orleans. So I got to Austin, and I had a weird experience because everyone from the dorms had come from high school mm-hmm. with all their friends.
So
I didn't like meet anybody for the whole first year or mm-hmm. two. Like, I met a few people, but
I had a similar experience. Yeah.
You know, it was just like very like, it took a while to break in because like mm-hmm. most people who go to UT have 250 friends.
Yeah, and it's already pretty clicky, so it's like hard to break into.
Very hard to break in. So it took me a long time. So I didn't have a lot going on. I was just studying and mm-hmm. just like exploring town and I went to the Chicago House and I saw him play there, and I was like, I don't know what this is. Mm-hmm. This is like a weightlifting, O.J. Simpson looking, soul singing, new age lyricing,
flamenco guitar playing,
yeah. new agey musician. It was just like, I was like, what is this?
You know? Yeah.
And I kept going back to see. I mean, I would scour the Chronicle every freaking weekend mm-hmm. or every night to find out when he was playing. And I went and saw, and I would ride my bike mm-hmm. to wherever it was, because at that time Austin was so small, like nothing was more than 20 blocks away.
Right.
You know? So I would just ride my bike and go see him. And I noticed that there was the same people would show up every time. Like, his following was fervent. Mm-hmm. I mean, very fervent. Like, we wouldn't miss anything. And
you
know, I started to meet some of those people, and you know, I guess I was just obsessed with like his unbridled uniqueness and his lack of marketability, I guess.
Right,
what makes him so special is that I can't even talk about him succinctly, mm-hmm. and that's what's so great about him.
Well, going into that, I guess it was probably a couple of years down the line. When did you first see him or think of him as an interesting subject for a documentary?
At first, my brother and I were musicians, and I was mm-hmm. a musician when I first came to Austin, and at first I was obsessed with the concept that I figured Mark and I would eventually probably have a semi-popular band mm-hmm. and that we would be more popular than him but inferior to him
mm-hmm.
and that my goal was like, I would like to take him on tour and put him in front
right.
so that I can show people what he is. But I guess it was way later, after he disappeared and after I was wondering what had happened to him
mm-hmm.
And it was honestly, it was when I was doing a lot of studio work mm-hmm. in LA. You know, I was like missing Austin, and I was like
mm-hmm.
just, you know, I am so thankful for all the studio work that we get, but it's a very different experience from how Mark and I originally created art. We were originally cavemen, kind of coming out, pushing lights around, grunting, like making the puffy chair.
Exactly. And
a very unarticulated process, a very primal, like, figuring it out as you go process. That is so the opposite in the studio world. So I was feeling strong urges to go back to primal states of creativity, and honestly, like, a documentary is a one-man documentary where I was pretty much the only crew person,
right,
was very primal from the filmmaker side. But beyond that, getting back in touch with Kevin, with that connecting to, like we were talking about, his unbridled uniqueness,
right,
you know, was kind of it was a reignition for me as well as it was for him.
So was this around like 2008, 2009 that you first emailed him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was he a little, like, reluctant at first? Because in the movie, his, the email that it's shown seems like he's a little hesitant to get that story out there. Did he show any of that to you, or what was that experience like when
he
first
was
got
a little
to you?
Reluctant. Mm-hmm. You know, the first agreement was, can I just come to Austin and film you? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason he was reluctant is because there wasn't anything going on.
Yeah.
You know, he was like, I think he was worried for me to come there and see that, like,
oh, that he's not, like,
nothing
doing
was happening.
He didn't, like,
yeah.
And stuff like that.
And honestly, when I left, I mean, like, my wife and I were staying at our friends on the east side, and he was a few blocks away, actually. It was random. Mm. And I came back home after filming him, and I was like, he's amazing. He's as amazing as I ever remembered, even more so.
Right.
And I was like, I don't think there's anything here, because he's, you know, he's not doing anything. But then he kind of started, you know, then found out about Spain. And
right, like I was going to ask, was there ever like a narrative in your head of how this was going to go, or did it just kind of naturally evolve, like with the Spain thing?
There were 100 narratives in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Just because I was like, I wanted to spend the time with Kevin. I wanted good things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if they would. But honestly, I had kind of given them up when I had gone back to L.A.,
mm-hmm.
and then when the Spain thing came, I was like, oh.
That was like the,
yeah. That was the kind of, like, sign from God, you know?
Very cool. And that was amazing how that got to work out. Were there any documentaries in particular? Because I know you're a huge documentary fan, as you told me before. Were there any in particular that kind of influenced you stylistically in making this doc?
Not really. It's weird, because I really just go on instinct when I'm filming. But I would just say that in general, American movie is probably the biggest, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, influence on our filmmaking in general, whether it's docs or whether it's narrative. Just a lead character who is very anti-hero, very...
Right, because it does feel like just a narrative Duplass movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's a very enigmatic,
mm-hmm.
you know, lead character who is his own worst enemy in a lot of ways, but at the same time has very purist ideals and is trying to accomplish something very difficult to accomplish.
This film has a very peculiar running time of, I think, like 40 minutes, is that right?
It's like 37 minutes.
Because it's like, it's not quite a short, but it's certainly not quite a feature.
No, it's a schlong. It's a short, it's a long
that
short.
That is the perfect way to put it. Is there, was that always the plan to make it like that? Because it seems like there'd be enough footage to like make a feature, Kevin Doc, but it was it like, this is
I wanted a feature, and I wanted it because I knew it would get more play.
Right.
And I knew that I could sell it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not a super marketable timing for festivals.
No, it's the worst length movie ever for festivals for distribution.
Right.
But I, at a certain point in editorial, I mean, I definitely had the material for a feature.
Right.
No doubt about it. I personally feel like the feature length would not be nearly as good.
Right.
But it would have been stretching out material, and I, you know, obviously Mark and I are obsessed with economy. We can't seem to get our features over 85 minutes, you know. I think Cyrus is our only movie that's ever broken the 90-minute barrier.
Right.
So I guess I would just say that was something that I talked about a lot, and that, you know, Mark and I talked about, and I talked about with my editor, and I just felt like it was the best movie, and more importantly, the purpose of this movie was to make something honest and great and reconnecting with being inspired. And so I just thought it was important to stay true to that.
I think one thing I really like about this film, and this may be even how I really found out about the Duplass brothers, was your Kickstarter campaign. It was very successful. It came out kind of around a time where not a lot of people were using Kickstarter.
Yeah, it was early.
That's not the case.
Yeah.
What was that always your plan to crowdfund from that, or where did that first experience, and what was that experience like?
No, I didn't know anything about it, and then someone from Sundance introduced me to the Kickstarter guys, and then I started thinking about Kevin as a possibility, and more importantly, also, just that, like, you know, because Mark and I do have some studio money now. Like, that's what we fund our independent films with. So we were like, well, we have our own money. I feel like we shouldn't be taking Kickstarter money necessarily.
Right.
You know, I don't... And then, but with the Kevin thing, obviously, I was losing a lot of money on it, and more importantly, I wanted to kickstart not just the proper finishing of the film to launch him, but also the launching of him. I mean, at
least... Because I think a nice button to this whole story is, like, he went on the festival circuit with you guys, and it was kind of like a comeback tour for him.
It totally... And that's how the whole film has been. It's just like, because what Mark and I figured out with South by Southwest is because when we were starting to apply to festivals, I was like, exactly what you were thinking. I was like, oh, God, we've really fucked ourselves.
Because
this is... It's impossible to program. Sometimes people program two long doc shorts.
Like two or three, and they have like just that as a thing.
And no one goes to those programs.
Exactly.
It's
awful. Unless it's like the new Spike Jonze one that they put in
that. Yeah, like that one year.
Exactly.
So Mark and I kind of came up with, and it just came from like, I really thought it was important for Kevin to play at the opening. I wanted it to premiere at South by Southwest. So it was all totally organic, and I was like, what I want, here's my ideal screening, is I want it to play at South by Southwest as a one-time show, and I know the Q&A, and I want Kevin to play afterwards, because it's going to be this first time he's played in Austin in 15 fucking years.
Right,
it's going to be huge. I know people are going to come out of the woodwork for it. I know it's going to sell out, and I know also that the Q&A is going to go on forever because,
the way that Kevin talked.
Because I've been to so many Q&As before, I'm like, when you have a great story and you have a great subject, people can't get enough of the Q&As. The Q&As is going to be as explosive as the film itself, as explosive
as... And it'll probably be feature length anyways.
Totally. Yeah. So that's what we told, Janet. We were like, look, this is weird, but like, it's not that weird. It is South by Southwest. Yeah. Like, we want to show it at the Alamo. We want it, we want to play the movie. We want him to play a few songs after. We want a Q&A. And honestly, you're going to get 70 minutes.
Yeah.
You're going to get a 75-minute experience.
Yeah.
And, you're just going to have to, you'd have to probably do it as a special screening type of thing.
I imagine she was really excited about it. John was for sure to have it at the Masterclass. He was really stoked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Janet came back and was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, I think it's hard. I really am appreciative to her for doing it because I think even as it's hard to break the mold at film festivals just because, people get worried about like, can you hear him play? Like, do we need amplifiers? Do we need this and that? Like, what are people going to think? All that stuff. So we took a chance on it. And then luckily, every film festival almost that we went to after that played in the same format.
Exactly.
And it turned into Kevin's comeback tour.
That's fantastic that worked out like that.
So awesome. I mean, it's like, very rarely does a singer-songwriter get flown around the world. And
yeah, especially one with a very obscure kind of style that Kevin has.
Exactly.
Sure.
And you know what I think, too, is like, in a weird way, it's the perfect venue for a singer-songwriter because... Mm-hmm. When you have, like, Robert Earl Keen and you have these people who sit up with a crowd and play songs, they generally tell stories, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And they tell stories about their lives and, like, what funded each song, what fueled things.
Yeah.
And
it
kind of...
It does work in a Q&A format.
It totally does. And the showing of the movie works, too, because it's, like, it's almost like, because people who do go to see, like... whatever, Ani DiFranco, they know a lot about her life, you know, so it's
they already
like,
have researched her, and then
that's
once they've seen the doc about Kevin, it's like, they have the same...
They have that connection,
yeah,
so in a weird way, it kind of played out as good as it possibly could, because there's not a lot of singer-songwriter venues anymore,
Well, what do you think people can learn from Kevin's story, because he definitely had a really kind of fascinating story when people see this documentary. What do you think is the main thing that can be learned from his experience?
I guess just that, I can only talk about what I learned from it. And that is that, like, as weird, as obscure, as inappropriate as it may seem I think you just got to go back to what you love and what you really, what gives you fuel and inspiration in a way that you can't even describe.
Right.
You know, because at that point in my career, like, my agents weren't pumped about me going and making a 37-minute documentary
that was
going to lose money, that was going to, I was going to blow money on, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's not an easy sell to pretty much anyone.
Nobody.
Yeah.
Even my wife was just kind of like, you sure you want to do this? Like, you could write a script for Hollywood and make a lot of money instead.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
We're about to have a baby, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you know, she's the most supportive person ever, but,
for sure, yeah.
you know, she just, for my own good, she was just kind of checking in, you know? It's like, no one other than me thought it was necessary.
Yeah.
But it was necessary, and I didn't know why, and, you know, and similarly for Kevin, I mean, I have to be honest, I mean, I sound like Jeff from Jeff Who Lives at Home, but, like, I was driving with Kevin on 360.
Mm-hmm.
The first time he told me about Spain and what it meant to him and, like, his connection to it, similar to how he is to me.
Right.
And this voice went off inside my head that said, you're going to Spain with Kevin.
Wow.
I mean, that's fucking crazy shit.
That really is. Wow.
That happened. In my head, I was like, my logical brain was like, you're not going to Spain with this weird dude.
Yeah, you know
what I'm saying? But then, like, fucking 3 months later...
It happened, yeah.
That's in Spain with Kevin. Mm-hmm. And you know, and it wasn't but a couple of weeks after that went off in my head, and I dismissed it logically, that the Granada Film Festival got in touch with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm Jeff Who Lives at Home now. You know, it's like,
For sure, yeah.
It's happening that way.
Well, I mean, the last time I talked to you for Dodeca, you had this great line, which you and your brother would love to make documentaries if they didn't make you broke.
Yeah.
After this experience, could you see yourself making another documentary, be it short or feature or schlong or whatever?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely. It has to be perfect.
It'd have to be a subject, obviously.
It has to be, yeah, like the Kevin type of experience where it's like... Mm-hmm. Somehow critical to my own evolution, my own, you know, it has to be, it's not like I'm going out and searching out doc subjects, but if something hits me, but I woke up this morning thinking about a doc that I would like to do, and,
Very cool. It just kind of depends if the inspiration strikes,
yeah.
I guess.
I would love it to be a feature, so at least it doesn't lose money.
That would be
ideal.
Okay.
But, you know, I don't, but, and also that it could get seen more, but, but that's okay.
Well, I kind of overheard it from the last person that was talking, but is there any other, are there any projects that you and your brother, or just you yourself, are kind of enamored in right now, or is it mainly just focusing on your family? Again, congratulations on the
thank you.
I don't know if I told you at the short, but yeah.
Thank you. We're honestly just writing a ton, you know, we both have a few things that we're heading up and then consulting with each other, and then if one of them... like flowers, then we'll both circle it and make it great. So
from that like Word doc or whatever
that massive swimming pool of like ideas, and
Very cool.
We're working on those and we're coming up with new ones, and just, you know, we're both up late at night a lot, so we're just doing a lot of writing, and we'll see what happens.
I guess I'm gonna steal one more question from that person. Is Austin on the table for coming back to film here?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely have one project that
I'm
super excited about that I hope I can do in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tricky
because,
you know, anytime you mention to a studio you want to shoot something in Austin, which we have before, they're just like, can't you just slide it over one state and save us $2.5 million?
Yeah.
And it's hard to say no, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there. I have at least two ideas that are set in Austin, and you know, my goal is to spend as much time as I can here. So that's I have personal and creative reasons for wanting to shoot here.